thank you for downloading the European Uppercut Podcast, a podcast that talks about professional wrestling. My name's Kai Valentine, and this is a continuation of our sit-down interviews with some of the UK's top indie wrestling talent. So far, I've had the chance to sit down with many of my local promotion here at Fight Factory Wrestling, and we continue on as this took place at Fight Factory Wrestling Homecoming. It's the first time that I've done one of these interviews for the podcast out and about at an event on location, and I tell you what, we picked probably the worst room to record this in, because not only were we sweating so much because it was like a sauna above a swimming pool, but also the sound quality is not the best. But I still wanted to share it with you because it's a great interview, an insight into the career and the mind of Mr. Joey Osborne. So make sure that you sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Coming up, it's my interview with Joey Osborne.
This is a Honky Tonk Man, the greatest WWE Intercontinental Champion of all time, and you're listening to the European Uppercut on the Trending Topics Network.
I'm just a Honky Tonk Man. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm
You're listening to the European Uppercut Podcast, a podcast that talks about professional wrestling. And this is a continuation of our sit-down interviews with some of the best talent on the British wrestling scene today. And today I'm joined by Mr. Joey Osborne. How are you doing, Joey?
I'm all right, buddy. How are you, mate?
I'm doing very well, thank you. So you have had a busy few weeks. You've just got back from a six-week stint over in the United States.
Yes, yes.
And how did that all come about?
I had a couple of changes in my personal life, and I just thought while I had the opportunity, I might as well go out to America, have a holiday, have fun, do a bit of wrestling.
And how did it come about with getting in touch with these American companies over there in Florida? Was it something that they approached you or you approached them?
I just found a load of them on Facebook, sent them all messages in February. I've got a couple of mates out there that I've had since they've been over here wrestling. They've come over to all and gone back, so I could get in touch with about two or three mates who could only get work as well. So yeah, and then I got replies back from most promoters, and I got work for them, and then I'm just assuming the ones that I didn't get back from either don't like me, think I'm rotten, or maybe got inundated with loads of loads of wrestlers asking to work the weekend of WrestleMania. So I'm kind of hoping it was the last one.
What was it like being over in the States then on the weekend of WrestleMania?
I didn't go. I watched WrestleMania in a wing house, which was better scenery, we'll say. But where I was in a place called Newport Richey, which is about 30 miles north of Tampa. So that's about two and a half hours away from Orlando, so the buzz didn't really reach out there as much, but there were a lot of bars that were showing it.
Now let's talk about your sort of history of watching professional wrestling. What's your first memory of seeing professional wrestling?
I think I might have had a WWF annual ages ago when I was too young to actually pay attention to what it was, so it might have been that. The first time I saw it on TV was on a Sunday night. I was about 14, and I switched on Channel 4, and they had Sunday Night Heat on, and it was a replay of The Rock against Big Show from SmackDown before No Way Out 2001 to wrestle Kurt Angle for the championship. So it was, 2001, so a while, 16 years ago.
And what was it that made you then decide that you wanted to step in the ring and start training yourself?
To begin with, I didn't want to. I just enjoyed watching it as a kid. And then my brother and sister bought me tickets for a WWE show in Manchester in, I think, 2007. And I went and watched the show. We got there late. And we walked in, and the first match was already on, Shelton Benjamin against Carlito. And I think Shelton gave Carlito a drop kick, and obviously I didn't realise at the time that they do put microphones under the ring in big arenas, so that people in the nosebleeds can actually hear the bump. Whoops, probably shouldn't have said that. Sorry. So obviously it's all, you know, theatre now, isn't it? So we walked in late. I saw Shelton give Carlito a dropkick, and the noise that the ring made, obviously being unaware of the microphone, I was like, oh, wow, that sounds pretty cool. And then, you know, just like watch the rest of the show, and I was like, I'd, you know, quite like to try that. So I would have been, I think I was 18, 17 or 18 at the time. So yeah, that's when I decided I wanted to do it.
And how long was the between that and first starting training then?
I think a year, maybe two. I passed my driving test when I was 17. And I was debating going training at FCW, which is Future Championship Wrestling, which is in Dudley. It was run by Kevin O'Neill and Mark Hogan at the time. And I was debating going down there, but at 17, having just passed my driving test, I thought of driving half an hour down a load of back roads and doing like 40-odd miles was like a little bit daunting for me. So I didn't go, although I probably should have gone earlier. But
so you stepped in the ring a couple of years later, you started taking like your first bumps. Can you remember what your first training session was like? What was your first thoughts when you got in there and went, oh, this is... Did you think this is tougher than you thought it was going
to
be?
I trained on mats to begin with. Like, they didn't have a ring to train in. It was back in 2008, I think. Or maybe late 2007, I forget. But I trained on mats, with obviously a crash mat to bump on. And I trained for probably 3 months before I actually got in a wrestling ring and took a bump. So the bump wasn't our choice. It was me being rock bottomed by another trainee who was a bit of a dick. I am allowed to swear, aren't I? Cool. Yeah, he was a dick. And he just gave me a rock bottom for the hell of it. And obviously, you know, being very new to it, you forget to tuck your chin and your breathing isn't correct as you bump. So you get winded and you whack the back of your head on the canvas, which bloody hurts. So, yeah, kind of put me off, actually. And I thought, well, I might as well get used to it because it's what I want to do for a career. So.
And you've been doing that career now for 10 years?
10 years in May next year. So it'll be 8 years on the 25th of this month. Oh, 9 years, sorry, on the 25th of this month. And then 10 years next year.
Wow. So you turn into that sort of veteran role then on the indie scene, would you
that
say?
That makes me feel old. Please don't. No.
Okay. No. Do you feel that though when you come somewhere like, you know, you spend a lot of time here at Fight Factory Wrestling in Lincoln, and you've sort of done some training sessions with them. How is it sort of getting in there with the younger guys and seeing them at the start of their careers?
I don't really think about that. I just think about them as like equals. You know, they're training in the same thing that I also train in. They're just in a different place. You know, they want to get to the same place I want to get. We both want to do the same thing. So it's like there's no point to me in thinking of them as, oh, you're just a trainee, so you're below me. As long as they're polite and respectful and they shake your hand before you know, when you get there and before you go. And as long as they're polite and respectful, you know, I don't mind having a laugh as long as I don't take it too far. Unfortunately, there are some trainees, you know, not just here, but other places as well, that think they're already above their station and they shouldn't be. And unfortunately, the way the business seems to be going at the minute, there's not a lot of, like, old timers, from what I know, who, if you got in the ring and you were being a very cocky kid, you'd get your shit pushed in, basically, in the ring. You'd get what we call stiffed, basically, for the entirety of the match, which would be a lesson, hoping that without having to be told, this is why I stiffed you, that you'd actually pick up on it, because otherwise the next person you wrestle, if your attitude is still the same, you'll get stiffed by them, and so on until you eventually figure it out or can't hack it and quit.
As someone who's outside of the industry, you hear a lot of the time about stories of people, the unwritten rule of professional wrestling where you're going to shake everyone's hand when you get into the, you know, into the dressing room. Is that as important as we are led to believe?
Yeah, because it's a sign of respect that you're not above yourself to walk around the entire locker room and say hello to everyone. That you don't walk in and expect everyone to walk up to you and shake your hand. It is important, and as well, you end up making friends that you sometimes only might see at those shows. So you're obviously, you know, saying hello to your mate and being respectful to them at the same time as appearing in wrestling. So.
Now, let's talk about some of your favourite matches that you've had in your career. If I had to put you on the spot and say your favourite match, what would it be?
Can I pick two?
Yeah.
They both involve the same family. So my favourite singles match would have to be from WAW against Roy Knight. WAW started running at Epic Studios, then they stopped running there, and then they've got this amazingly good, huge sponsor deal, an investor, I believe, and then they started running back at Epic Studios again. I've no idea why there was a lull, but at the end of their first run of Epic Studio shows, I wrestled Roy, and it was just like, it was a match that had a real good story to it, and obviously he's over as hell in Norwich. Him, his brother, you know, his dad, his mom, his son Ricky, who's just been like a villain for God knows how long. But the thing is, I mean, the problem is that if you're a good wrestler, whether you're a good guy or a bad guy, you're going to get appreciated. And Ricky's like 17 years of age and he's mentally good. And it's going to be quite scary to see how good he is in a couple of years. But yeah, Roy at Epic on the last run of shows there was just, it was awesome because the match just had everything and I just came backstage buzzing. And then I've had like so many tag matches with both Zach and Roy. And like, they're all the same, but they're all different in very small sort of ways. But they're always really fun. So it's going to probably be those two matches, I would say.
And what about here, you know, we're talking here whilst we're at an event homecoming for Fight Factory Wrestling. What's been your sort of like favourite match or moment whilst you've been wrestling under this company?
Probably getting strapped to a stretcher and carried out and getting turned from a villain into a babyface. when I lost the championship to Robbie in, I think, maybe February 2016, I believe it was, or something like that. I'm looking at my reference who has
idea. I think it was about a year ago. I was there for that.
That was pretty cool. And then obviously got into a smaller room and got strapped off the board and just sat up and looked straight at Beck and I was like, so am I a babyface now? Because I wanted to turn babyface for ages. And she was like, oh, well, I'm not sure. I don't know. But yeah, that eventually happened and that was cool. I've done stuff with obviously like Dale as well, and I've known Dale from WAW. I've done stuff with Hayden as well, and I enjoy doing stuff with both of them like equally. But like they're both different in different ways. Like Hayden, I can have like a proper genuine laugh with because I know him outside of the ring. You know, he's like helped me out. He helped me out at the beginning of the year with a little personal thing I told you about earlier on, and like he's helped me out before that, and he brought me in ages ago. So, and obviously like Dale, I've known from WAW. But I get on with them the same way in wrestling. I see them as like higher up than me because they've been wrestling longer than me. Like Dale's been around for ages. Hayden's been wrestling longer than me. And he owns a company as well. So, but then away from wrestling, it's just like a different relationship because I know Hayden more personally.
Would you say that you sort of have a click then behind the click?
That's a controversial word to say.
It's a controversial word to say.
Yeah.
But I've seen a couple of photos here and there. You know. Repping the t-shirts and stuff, so I
have no idea what you're on about. It's classified until Hayden sees fit to release it.
So you talked there about, you know, you turning babyface. Do you prefer working babyface or heel? Which one do you prefer to do?
I don't mind either, to be fair. Most places I'm working at the minute, I'm a babyface, and then I think I'm filling in just one place. I don't mind either. Either's easy in their own different way, so.
What's it like being like babyface somewhere and being heel somewhere else then? Do you think it's more difficult now in a day and age where you've got like the internet, or do you think that makes it easier?
I don't think it makes a difference.
Yeah.
Not every kid's on Facebook. You know, like when you go to a show, a lot of the noise you get is going to be from the kids. If it's a family show, obviously, if you're in a Progress show or like an ICW show or an OTT show, they're not going to give a toss whether you're a face or a heel. They're going to make up their own mind. You know, you could be a baby face in Scotland and a villain in like London. So, yeah.
How do you find like working in front of the sort of kid-heavy crowds then? Do you like the interactions with the kids? Have you had any kids come up to you and like any interactions like that?
You always get it as a wrestler. You're always going to get it after the show or before the show. Or sometimes out in town if you see someone who knows that you're a wrestler. Other crowds are more fun to the extent where you can get away with pretty much saying what you want and acting how you want to a degree that obviously doesn't cause offence to other people. Because kids shows are a bit more fun because you can just be a little bit more immature, you know, kind of be a big kid yourself just for the sake of entertaining the kids, because obviously you are entertaining the kids a little bit more than the rest of the crowd who are going to be adults or parents who are just bringing their kids along because they've probably nagged at them for the past 5 weeks to go to the wrestling. So
this is Europe's number one professional wrestler, Gredo. It's yourself. Look, if you're down, if you feel like shit, I'm telling you, what you need to do is listen to the European Uppercut Podcast. That's right, the European Uppercut Podcast. I'll say it 3 times, the European Uppercut Podcast. It's the best podcast in the world, apart from The Art of Wrestling, Stone Cold's, JR's, Chris Jericho's, but it's definitely better than Bauer and Pollock.
Who do you feel that you are influenced by?
Obviously, the first wrestler I was influenced by was The Rock. So he was the first wrestler that I saw. He's got a lot of charisma, obviously. You know, he's really entertaining. So it's fun to watch what he says and what he does. You know, not to steal things, but to get ideas of how to say things and how to time yourself along with the crowd, you know, if they start a chant or whatever. So
Do you like the opportunity then to cut a promo whenever you get a chance to?
Yeah. Depends as well to a degree who I'm in the ring with. If I know I can bounce off them, like if I do a promo with Hayden or Dutch or any of the higher up guys in Fight Factory, because I obviously get on with them on a personal level away from wrestling. So like that'd be Ed Ripper, DDI, Dylan Soe, Eliza Rue, Robbie X. You know, if I'm in the ring with people who are my mates outside of the ring as well, then we can bounce off each other and it'll be more entertaining. If not for the fans, at least it'll entertain ourselves in our heads.
You've had some heat in the past with people in the business. When you get a bit of heat from a promoter, another wrestler, how is it like that to deal with in the professional wrestling industry?
It should be like any normal life situation. Next time you see that promoter or that wrestler, you walk up to them, shake their hand. If you're in the wrong, you apologise. Even if you don't feel that you're in the wrong, you should apologise anyway, because it's just good manners. And sometimes, unfortunately, some things take longer to, you know, sort out than others do. But I've had heat with a wrestler who most people know about, so there's no point in keeping it a secret, of Bubblegum. But obviously it's something that was personal, which doesn't need to be, you know, spoken about. But I saw him just before I went out to America, and I finally, after 7 years, got the chance to say to him, look, I was out of order. What happened shouldn't have happened. I apologise. Held out my hand. I was like, if you don't want to shake it, I totally understand. And he was like, mate, it was ages ago. I'm over it. I appreciate you pulling me to the side and saying sorry. He shook my hand, and then he's fined me, which for me is like a massive, you know, weight off my shoulders. Because it's just like, there's no point in having grief in your workplace, whether you're the person that causes it or not. You know, there's no need for it. And obviously there's like still one or two more issues that obviously don't need to be spoken about, but I'm hoping to sort out sooner or later, just because I don't see the point in holding a grudge with people. I don't hold a grudge with people, but I don't see the point in that, in there having to be, you know, that situation. The world would be a better place if everyone just got along, really, wouldn't it?
In wrestling, then, the big plan for the future, what's your hope and dream?
Well, my hope and dream is obviously WWE. And my ultimate dream is winning the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. You know, I think most people, if not every person that goes to the WWE, whether they're male or female, their ultimate goal should be and probably is to main event WrestleMania and win the championship there. So that's like the ultimate dream. I know there's some people just want to wrestle for Ring of Honor or do all the indies in America. Some people just want to wrestle for New Japan. Some people just want to wrestle for the company that trains them, and they're more than happy to do that. They don't really care if they get an outside booking. You know, they don't have aspirations to go to Europe or whatever. everyone has different goals in wrestling, and whatever anyone chooses is their goal, they have the right to have their goal, and if they do it, then fair play to them.
So, main event of WrestleMania, WWE Championship, who would be your hand-picked opponent?
I don't know, because, like, well, if it happens, because, you know, it might not, you know, if it happens, then there's going to be loads of different people around. Like, by, you know, probably in like 2 or 3 years, we're going to probably see, like, Pete Dunne or Tyler Bate or one of the other boys that have been in the championship tournament, probably see them in a main event WrestleMania match. Wouldn't surprise me.
How good does it make you feel as a British wrestler to see, like, the British scene being taken seriously by the WWE and, you know, being integrated into their product? Is it something that you sort of was accepting of, or were you a bit cautious at first when you saw them sort of putting their hand in the pot, maybe?
Not really, because, I mean, if you look at NXT, they've got every wrestler, virtually, who is a big name on the indies, up to about probably 4 or 5 years ago when they signed, I guess, Kevin Steen and El Generico would have been, you know, though I guess they would have been the first crop of, like, the indie superstars after Punk and Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
So they're kind of pulling all the big names from the States, and then now they're just reaching across the world and pulling all the big names from all the different territories, because they know that they're going to have to end up evolving with the way the business is at the minute. So if you want to evolve the best, then you're going to want to take the best from that field in order to be keeping up or ahead straight away.
Hey, you're listening to Robbie X. Make sure you check out European Uppercut Podcast. Robbie X.
Sometimes I get a good feeling. Which of the guys have you been in the ring with? Many of the guys that have been on the championship tournament.
Yeah, I wrestled Tyler. I've wrestled P. I think I've wrestled Dan Maloney at some point ages ago. I've wrestled T-Bone. There's a couple of others. Chris Tyler. I've trained with Jack Stars. Sam Gradwell. I think I wrestled him ages ago. So quite a lot of them I know of or know. So,
who on the British scene that you've not had the chance to get in the ring with yet are you desperate to get in the ring with?
I've been in with him before, but I would love to have another match with him, which would be Jimmy Havoc. And I was meant to, but my flight home from the States got, you know, the ticket got exchanged, massive confusion, so I couldn't wrestle him, which I was gutted about. I'd like to wrestle people like Travis Banks. I've wrestled Ospreay ages ago. I would like to wrestle him again. There's loads. It's just such a broad field, but some of them people I've already wrestled and would just, you know, like to again. No, can't think of anyone off the top of my head. That's an on-the-spot question, that is, mate. That was a bit nasty. That was a little bit nasty.
Well, we'll go to a couple of easier ones now, because I hear that you can do... I was reading an interview with you where you said that you could do a bit of a badass Arnold Schwarzenegger impression.
Sorry? I've got no idea what you're about. Well, I think it's good. I've been told by other people it's good. I don't know if it's good.
You know what I'm going to ask next.
No, I don't think it's up to anyone to decide. I just don't think it should be approached. You know, there's no need to.
Well, another question then for you then is...
I can do the Arnold. Of course I can do the Arnold. But now that you put me on the spot, I'm thinking, is it as good as Arnold? Is it not as good as Arnold? I don't know.
Pretty damn good.
Well, thank you. Dankeschön. That is thank you in German. Yeah.
You have recently, whilst you've been over in the States, I've noticed through your Facebook that you've sort of dropped the pants and gone to the tights.
Yeah, I don't know what you were saying.
I need to rewrite that link. But you're going for the tights now. Is that something that you've sort of never done in your career and now just trying it out?
I used them once or twice when I first started. I just felt like a change because I've worn trunks for about 6 years, and I just thought, yeah, I'll just go for tights, have a little change up, see how I get on with them. I like them, but yeah, it's kind of like I've come up with a new logo, so I thought if I'm doing a new logo, then I might as well change my look a little bit and change my style. and kind of, to an extent, revamp, but not fully revamp, kind of keep some little bits the same. So I thought if you're going to do one, you might as well go and do the whole hog and change them all, really, mind you. So,
how important do you feel it is to change up your look and your game then in professional wrestling?
I guess it would kind of tie in with what your character is, because your gear's really got to suit your character, unless it isn't really specific and your character can wear, you know, what they want. Like if it's Dude Love, you wouldn't really care what they wanted, because, you know, Dude Love's like smoking a lot of weed before he wrestles, so you're going to expect him to, you know, dress stupidly. But yeah, I don't know. I think it can affect a crowd's perspective of you. And then sometimes it doesn't really matter, I don't think.
So what point in your career did you first start coming to Fight Factory Wrestling? Because as I say, we're here today, it's homecoming, it's the first time since the 1NK Centre became the new home of Fight Factory. When did you first step through the door at Fight Factory?
It would have been the Turn It Up show with Too Cool, which might have been 3 years ago,
right.
I think.
I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, I've just shaved my hair off. Yeah, I think it was about 3 years ago. And I came in as the champion because a couple of weeks earlier, on another show in Lincoln, with someone that isn't very well liked by Hayden and Becca, we did a title switch on his show, which was kind of me, like, hardwaying myself into a booking, which was a little bit unprofessional and cheeky of me. But at the time, I was kind of the mindset of I don't really give an F, basically. So, yeah, I kind of came to them via another company from doing the title switch. But it was good because it gave me, like, an immediate thing to go into, and it gave me immediate heat anyway, because I took the title off Hayden himself. So, being the big hometown boy, beat John Cena.
And so you've been here at Fight Factory Wrestling. Have you been enjoying the sort of last few years of spending time around here as well?
Yeah, I have. At one point I was thinking of moving up here just before I went to the States. But it kind of makes more sense to stay at home at the minute with parents, so I can, you know, save up to either, you know, eventually buy a house or rent another place or whatever happens in the next couple of years, you know, to prepare for that. But I've grown a lot closer to everyone up here. As I said, Hayden and Rebecca have helped me out a lot. They've helped me out with personal issues. They've helped me out, you know, professionally when, you know, one or two things got sour. So they've been a massive help to me. And obviously I've grown closer to all the people up here as well, which is a lot better. So I've got like, I made quite a lot of good friends up here, which is cool. So I'm happy.
And with the Fight Factory Wrestling, there's the academy here as well. Who have you spotted around this area where you go have a big future on the British scene, on the international stage?
The minute, everyone who should have a future is having a future. As for people that are coming up and through, I think Kip Sabian's going to probably be the next person that does that, because he's always been there, but he's kind of come out of nowhere at the same time, like in the past like few months. And he's like up and down the country all over the place. I think he's debuting for NGW or something in a couple of weeks. He's at Southside, he's at WAW still, he's here at Lincoln, he's at Hope. He's going to probably be at RevPro and Progress and ICW and OTT by the end of the year. It wouldn't surprise me.
You, when you've been out in Florida, you spent a little bit of time and you did a match at Ring of Honor.
Yeah, in October last year that was.
How was that as an experience then?
It was actually kind of the same.
Yeah.
Which is going to be taken as one of two ways. It's going to either be taken as completeness or arrogance, or it's going to be taken as, well, of course it's the same. There was one point when I am backstage and I'm just stood there thinking, oh shit, I'm backstage at Ring of fucking Honor. I'm going to have a debut in a minute. And like, it was only a dark match, but it's still wrestling for Ring of Honor. But, you know, I'm still backstage. I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to be wrestling in a minute. Shit. I thought, hang on a minute. You have to put yourself in the mindset of it's the same everywhere. Otherwise, if you know, you might get overcome, or you might make a fuck up because of how nervous you are.
And what events have you got coming up that you're booked on over the next couple of weeks, months, whatever you can remember?
Obviously, we've got Fight Factory today. I've got Shropshire Wrestling Alliance on the 3rd of June, where we have Tyler Bate. I've got Fight Factory throughout June. I think I've got one in the middle, if there is one. That might be July. I've got the end of June. I've got a few other bits coming up, MBWA and RCWA. I think that's it, without consulting my diary.
Yeah. And finally, the next 5 years, say, where do you see Joey Osborne?
I don't know. I know where I'd like to be in 5 years, obviously in the WWE. But honestly, I have no idea. Ideally, WWE. I mean, if not, as long as I'm not, you know, in immense amounts of pain or dead, I don't really mind.
What's it like dealing with pain then as a professional wrestler? Because obviously you go through a lot and you're on the road a lot.
Yeah.
Is it, and I imagine that it can be quite tough.
Can be. It kind of depends on the style of wrestling that you do, which is obviously going to alter the amount of bumps you take, which is going to, again, alter the scale of pain. Sometimes it can be very painful, very, very painful. Like, even just getting up out of bed hurts. But again, it does depend on your style. If you're more ground-based, you're probably not going to have a lot of pain, because you might get pain in your knees, but that'd be it. Obviously, if you're bumping a lot and you're up and down, then you're going to have, you know, back pain. So I think it really depends on the style you do. And my style, I don't really fly around a lot, so I kind of get along all right. Just have a sore back every now and again.
And you've got your... I do have one more question, because I've realised I got one sent in from Sam in Lincoln, who said, you know, you've got yourself in... you're carrying on keeping yourself in incredible shape. How do you keep up with it?
Just routine now. Just go to work, go to the gym, prep my food, sleep, repeat. And then obviously the weekend, you just throw a show in there instead. Instead of, you know, your shoot job, you get to do the job that you enjoy.
That's the day in the life of a wrestler, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Some wrestlers, not all wrestlers. We're all different in our own special, unique ways.
Well, what do you think it is that sets you apart from the crowd?
It's come with a bit of an intensity, a little bit more intense. Obviously, here is a good guy. I'm not a happy, clappy baby face. I'm more, you know, more of an intense baby face. But then at the same time, I can mix things up and add different styles in here and there. So I like to think I'm a very, very versatile wrestler, which I can obviously bring to a show. I can do any style, like old school, like old proper British, sorry, Mount Evans, I guess, style wrestling. I can do a bit of lucha, I can do a bit of flying.
Which do you prefer? Like, if you had the complete free reign choice of going out and doing a match in a style that you wanted, which would you choose?
Every single style in that same match, every single style, get a little bit of everything in. Depends on where you are. If you main event, everything, because you're the last match on the show, so you have the right to do that. So, yeah, if it was in the main event, every single style possible, or as many styles possible, because then you're going to give a match to at least, which is going to have a part, at least one person that's going to be entertained by the style they prefer, catering to all.
I think that's the perfect way to end. Thank you very much, Joey, for joining me, and good luck with homecoming today.
Cheers, I'm going to go put my little tights on now.
This is the Beast of Belfast, Big Demo, and you're listening to the European Uppercut Podcast.
I'd like to give a big thank you to everyone who has tuned in for today's episode. A big thank you, of course, to Joey Osborne for taking the time out before the event to chat with me, and to everyone at Fight Factory Wrestling for making me feel welcome as always and putting on a fantastic show. If you still haven't got down to a Fight Factory Wrestling event, you should check it out. Also, check out all the other interviews I've done with their roster as well. Coming up next week on the European Uppercut podcast, there will hopefully be a panel episode of the show as usual. There will also be another great sit-down interview with Eliza Rue, the ladies' champion of Fight Factory Wrestling. Hear about her history as a professional wrestling fan and who her influences are, who she's already been in the ring with in her 2-year career. You will be amazed, you will love it, and you will need to tune in. So make sure that you subscribe to the Trending Topics Network on iTunes and come back here next week.